From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Democratic National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. It is night two of the Democrats' big party. This evening, former President Bill Clinton will formally nominate Barack Obama for a second term. Democrats have been making an aggressive pitch for their candidate, drawing a stark contrast with former Governor Mitt Romney on the economy, women's health, gay marriage, and other issues. Tonight at the podium, we'll hear from veterans and labor leaders, from Elizabeth Warren, a Democratic superstar facing a tough congressional campaign in Massachusetts, and of course, former President Bill Clinton expected to address the economy. Earlier this evening, former House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi spoke to delegates, and she is now here with us from Charlotte. Welcome to you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
Madam Leader, I want to start with something that caused quite a stir down there this evening. The party platform had dropped a line about Jerusalem being the capital of Israel, but this evening it was added back in along with a reference to God, and this was apparently at the request of President Obama himself. Can you tell us what happened?
Well, by the time I found out about it, President Obama had already intervened. And the platform now, of course, does mention God. But I want to say that there are over 20 references to religion and faith. And in fact, the policies are very, shall we say, compassionate and consistent with faith and religion that are in our platform. We just don't use the words. We have the proposals that support that. In terms of what happened on Jerusalem being the capital of Israel, I don't know how it happened, but my understanding is that the platform was not specific in details about proposals or conditions for a peace process. But this had always been part of our policy. It has bipartisan support in the Congress for over the years, and we're all much more comfortable with that being back in the platform. And that was all done very quickly.
All right. You have what's called a drive for 25, meaning you're hoping that Democrats can regain control of the House by winning back 25 seats.
That's right.
Seems like it could be a steep climb. Are there states or a part of the country that you see best prospects in?
Yes, I do. I think that drive for 25, of course, I want 35, but 25 is what we need to take the majority. That in states like Texas, California, New York, Illinois, Florida, Nevada, Arizona, to name a few, we can win more than one seat. Some states, three or four. In other states, we'll win one. Did I say Maryland, Washington State, places like that? Or we can pick up a net gain of one seat around the country. And Iowa, well, it really, I could go over the whole map. But in the states that the president is not focusing, because they're not battleground states, we expect to win about 18 to 20 seats. And then where he is, at least 10 or a dozen more seats. So again, we have outraised, out-redistricted, out-recruited the Republicans. The point is we have excellent candidates who are concerned about the obstruction the Republicans are insisting upon in the Congress, and they're determined to run and they're determined to win. We're very proud of them. We have a great deal of support to re-elect them.
Some candidates have opted to stay away from the convention this week, apparently preferring to distance themselves from the president. Do you worry that his flagging popularity might hurt some down-ticket races?
With all due respect, I don't accept that characterization. Many of the members are not here because they're engaged in tough races. I have encouraged many of them to use their resources and their time in their district during this week, exploiting the opportunity that the convention brings with viewing parties and the rest of that. And I think that in the interest of the 1 in 5 children living in poverty in America, it's in our interest to win this election, to help them. And we have a very strong showing of House Democratic members here in North Carolina to support the president. I think that people did what was in the interest of winning the election for those children and to support President Obama.
All right. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.
And now I've got NPR's senior Washington editor Ron Elving with me and E.J. Dionne from the Washington Post and the Brookings Institution. They are both in Charlotte. Hi, guys.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing, Jennifer?
Good. And here with me in Washington, D.C., Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon. Hey, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
So how big a deal was that Jerusalem God switch in the party platform? Ron?
Party platforms are something that are important for those people who pay attention to where the party actually is on the issues. They should be read by every American and taken very seriously. Now, how many people actually do read them and take them very seriously? I've written about them for many years, and I think that they should matter a good deal more, but we've never found a way to put a platform on a video or to make it a good speech topic, and it does require a certain amount of engagement, and so as a result, they get bandied about largely by what people say about them. And this will be bandied about by a lot of people tonight as some kind of indication of one kind or another. But look, the president clearly wanted to put this controversy in some sense or another to rest. He wanted to intervene. He wanted to get credit for intervening and get the word God explicitly back into the platform. As we just heard Nancy Pelosi say, there are a number of other references to what would have to be called religion. But specifically to get the word, the name of God into the platform, the context is saying God-given talents. That's not exactly a theological treatise.
Right.
And also this issue about Israel, which will always be with us. Every candidate for president wants to say that we should move the capital of Israel to Jerusalem, if that's what the Israelis want. And then as soon as that person becomes president, they go back to our longstanding policy of leaving it to the negotiations.
So much ado about not much, but Matt Continetti, the Republicans are having a field day with it.
They are, because, you know, they spent all of last week being hammered by the Obama campaign for their platform, which had language on abortion, which was longstanding, but also very pro-life. And so now I think there's a feeling that the Democrats have their comeuppance. But, of course, it wasn't only the platform that caused some pregame trouble for the convention today. Remember, the Obama campaign also had to move his big speech to the Time Warner Arena tomorrow night rather than in Bank of America Stadium, where
weather,
it was going
another
to be held.
Theme here.
That's right. So it's a combination of bad weather and bad platform messaging. Bill Clinton has a big rescue job ahead of him, I think.
E.J. Dionne, a rocky start to the second day here.
Yeah, well, I think it was all a distraction from what was a really good night for them last night. What the Democrats would have preferred is that people continue to talk about Michelle Obama's great speech and Mayor Castro's good speech. And so it was a distraction. And the Jerusalem issue, the Republicans hope to cut Barack Obama's huge margin among American Jews. He won 78% of the vote. They've been trying to argue that Obama isn't pro-Israel enough. And this Jerusalem issue is largely symbolic, because Ron had it right. We don't move our embassy to Jerusalem, even though candidates always say they will. But it got this sort of music wrong, if you will, for a lot of people in the pro-Israel community, and they went back and cleaned that up.
All right. Thanks,
you don't
EJ.
Leave out God. It's just a bad idea, you know?
We're going to go down to the podium there now in Charlotte. Cecile Richards is speaking. She's president of Planned Parenthood.
The Tea Party took over the House of Representatives. They promised us they were going to create jobs and jumpstart the economy. But instead, on day one, they came after women's health, and they haven't let up since. Right? So first, they voted to end cancer screenings and well women visits for 5 million women. They voted to end funding for birth control at Planned Parenthood. And for good measure, they even tried to redefine rape. And now, Mitt Romney is campaigning to get rid of Planned Parenthood and overturn Roe versus Wade. And we won't let him. This past year, women learned that when we aren't at the table, we're on the menu. So this November, women are organizing, we're mobilizing, and we're voting for the leaders who fight for us. Nearly 100 years ago, when Planned Parenthood was founded, birth control was illegal. And as a result, few women had the opportunity to finish school. And we really weren't even expected to live much past the age of 50. But times have changed. Today, we are mothers, and we are teachers, and scientists, and accountants, and members of the armed forces. And because of President Barack Obama, more women than ever are serving in the U.S. Cabinet and on the United States Supreme Court. We've come so far. We've come so far. So why are we having to fight in 2012 against politicians who want to end access to birth control? It's like we woke up on a bad episode of Mad Men. Because when Mitt Romney says he'll get rid of Planned Parenthood and turn the clock back on a century of progress, it has real consequences for the 3 million patients who depend on Planned Parenthood each year. Women like Libby Bruce, who you just heard from, or women like Brandy McKay, a 27-year-old woman whose stage 2 breast cancer was caught at a Planned Parenthood health center, and thank God she's now cancer-free. Or the woman who went on Facebook after Paul Ryan voted to defund Planned Parenthood and posted, "Well, I guess they don't understand that us military wives go to Planned Parenthood when the doctor on base can't see us." So Mr. Romney and Mr. Ryan are campaigning for women's votes by saying that women need their help. Okay, this is coming from two men who are committed to ending insurance coverage for birth control, who would turn women's health care decisions over to our bosses, and who won't even stand up for equal pay for women. Okay, well, as my grandmother back in Texas would have said, any more help from Mitt Romney, and I'm going to have to take in ironing. But here's the good news. We already have a president who's on our side. President Obama understands women. He trusts women, and on every single issue that matters to us, he stands with women. President Obama ensured that women's preventive care, including birth control too, will be covered by all health care plans with no copay, no matter where we work. And because of President Obama, soon women won't be denied insurance coverage because we've had breast cancer or survived sexual assault. And we're no longer going to pay more than men for the exact same health insurance. Thanks to President Obama, being a woman is no longer a pre-existing condition in America. That's right. That's right. Well, you know, back in Texas, we say that you dance with them what brung you. Okay? Well, President Obama brought women to this dance, and we're staying with him all the way through November. Twenty-four years ago, my mother, former Texas Governor Ann Richards, spoke to this convention. Thank you. She reminded us she reminded us how far we've come. And that there was a time when folks had to drink from separate water fountains. When kids were punished for speaking Spanish in the school. When her grandmother couldn't even vote. My mom spent her entire life working to make things more fair. Right? She believed that the American dream wasn't meant for just a few. It promised opportunity for everyone. Well, just a couple of years before she passed, Mom had the chance to become friends with a young senator named Barack Obama. And she saw in him the promise of the future and the promise of America. The promise of an America that always moves forward. That's the America we believe in. That's the future we'll be voting for this November. That's right. Because as women, we've come way too far to turn back. And we won't. Because, you know, Mom wouldn't have stood for it, and neither will we. So this November, we're going to keep moving forward, and we're going to re-elect President Barack Obama. Thank you. Thank you.
And that was Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, talking about how the Tea Party and Republicans have, as she described it, assaulted women's reproductive choices. She said President Obama stands with women, and with him, being a woman is no longer a pre-existing condition in America. Very briefly, Ron Elving, still more on women's issues tonight. Very big theme this week.
Yes, no question that the Democrats are keenly aware that the double-digit lead or thereabouts that President Obama has among women is his ace in the hole. That is the stronghold he is defending at this convention after the Republicans made a concerted effort to cut into that lead last week.
Right. We'll probably hear more about them coming up, but we are working our way to the headline speech tonight by former President Bill Clinton, who is expected to focus on the economy. For more analysis throughout the evening, you can look for the It's All Politics blog at NPR.org. You're listening to special coverage of the 2012 Democratic National Convention from NPR News.
Support for NPR's election coverage comes from America's Natural Gas Alliance, representing the natural gas industry and supporting nearly 3 million jobs across the country, ANGA.US. From the Principal Financial Group, managing investments and working to help build dreams for more than 130 years, the Principal at dreamagain.com. And from Nissan, featuring the all-new Nissan Altima with 38 miles per gallon highway. Nissan, innovation that excites. This is NPR.
This is special coverage of the 2012 Democratic National Convention from NPR News. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. It's the second night of the convention. Democrats continuing to make their argument about why President Barack Obama should be given a second term. At the podium in Charlotte now, Steny Hoyer, a congressman from Maryland. Let's listen in.
They want to drown the captain and are prepared to sink the ship to do so. For 4 years, Republicans in Congress have pursued a strategy of confrontation, obstruction, and a refusal to compromise. That's why not a single House Republican voted for the law that brought our economy back from the brink. That's why President Obama's jobs plan was not even put on the House floor. Instead of trying to fix the problem, the Republicans, unfortunately, played politics. But despite historic levels of obstruction, President Obama was able to bring the economy back from the verge of a second Great Depression. Hear me, delegates and my fellow Americans. In January 2009, when the president took office, our economy lost more than 800,000 jobs in January. This past July, the economy added 172,000 jobs, the 29th consecutive month of private sector job gains. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we know that is not enough. But it's a turnaround of nearly 1 million jobs from when President Obama took office. Surely even Mr. Romney thinks we're better off today than we were then. These past four years, while President Obama was fighting for the middle class, Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, and their Tea Party allies cared more about tearing down the president than building up America. They're hoping we'll forget that. They're also hoping that we'll forget their role in piling up a mountain of debt being left to our children and to our grandchildren. My friend Paul Ryan talks about fiscal responsibility, but voted to put two wars on the credit card. He voted to spend trillions of dollars on tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. He voted for a prescription drug benefit with no plan to pay for it. He abandoned the bipartisan principle that we must pay for what we buy. And he voted against the balanced deficit reduction plan produced by a bipartisan commission, a fact, by the way, that he didn't tell us last week. He also didn't tell you that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want to end the Medicare guarantee and turn it into a voucher, which would leave seniors with the increased costs. He also didn't tell you that President Obama has strengthened Medicare by taking away big subsidies to insurance companies and by tackling waste, fraud, and abuse. He didn't tell you that President Obama has saved seniors more than $4 billion on prescription drugs by closing the donut hole, and that President Obama added years to the life of Medicare. Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan promise hard truths, but they don't deliver hard answers or real solutions. President Obama and Democrats are working tirelessly to move our country toward over a near unanimous opposition of Republican leaders and Republican members of Congress. Ladies and gentlemen, the decision we have to make this November is simple. Do we keep moving forward, or do we join the Romney-Ryan retreat? Barack Obama and Joe Biden have been working hard to help middle-class America make it in America. Let's send them back to the White House and keep on moving forward. God bless America. God bless every American, and God bless all of you. Thank you very much.
And that was Steny Hoyer, a congressman from Maryland. He said that President Obama has done a number of things to strengthen the economy, save money for seniors. He said Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan promise hard truths but don't deliver real solutions. Coming up to the podium next is Massachusetts Congressman Barney Frank. He's retiring at the end of this year, his 16th term. He's a ranking member on the House Financial Services Committee. The Dodd-Frank Wall Street Consumer Protection Reform Act bears his name. He's also the first sitting member of Congress to have a same-sex marriage. And actually, we're going to get to him in just a moment. They're playing another video there in Charlotte. Let me go back to our guest analysts here. We're leading up to President Bill Clinton's speech tonight. E.J. Dionne, what does he need to do?
Well, he needs to tell Americans that Obama has pursued the right course and that Mitt Romney would take us in the wrong direction, and that's exactly what he will do. Yeah, they've given us some excerpts of Bill Clinton's speech already, and I think this really captures what he needs to say and will say. He says in Tampa, the Republican argument against the president's reelection was pretty simple. We left him a total mess. He hasn't finished cleaning it up yet, so fire him and put us back in. That is a very good example of Bill Clinton's gift for simplifying without oversimplifying. And he's also going to emphasize that the difference between Republicans and Democrats is, and again, I'm quoting from what Clinton will say, he said that the Republicans want a you're-on-your-own, winner-take-all society, and that Democrats want a society of shared responsibility, a we're-all-in-this-together society. And I think it's a 1-2 punch. It's Obama has done basically the right things to get us on track, even though we're not all the way there yet. And by the way, the philosophical approach of the Republicans is very, very different from the philosophical approach of the Democrats in the country. He believes Democrats believe are on the side of we're all in this together.
All right. Thanks, EJ. Going down to the floor now in Charlotte, Debbie, NPR's Debbie Elliott. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. How are you, Jennifer?
Good. Who do you have for us now?
I am sitting in the Florida delegation with Phil Giorno from Casadega, Florida. He's a Vietnam veteran. His father served in World War II, and he tells me his brother served in the first Iraq War. He's watching a very moving tribute to veterans right now. They are a big highlight of the program here. And, Mr. Giorno, I wanted to ask you a little bit about why you are a Democrat.
I'm a Democrat because I believe in Democratic values of to help the working class and help our returning veterans. The Republicans have been quick to send our people to war, but very tight on funding our veterans when they come back home. And the president has passed the largest health care bill in the history of America for veterans.
Now, you talked to me a little bit about how you were troubled when some of your friends talk about not necessarily respecting the commander-in-chief because they don't agree with his politics.
That's correct. No matter who you had voted for, to disrespect the president by some of these patriot groups where some veterans are in those groups, to put a picture of the president next to Hitler, who killed 20 million people in genocide, or picture of our president next to Stalin, or picture of our president with a hammer and sickle on. It's so disrespectful. And every time I see it, I go after it. And even my friends who do not like President Obama have agreed with me. It's very disrespectful to our president, and never do that to our commander-in-chief.
What would you like to hear the president say this week about veterans?
About I know what he says about veterans. We and him have talked many times about veterans, and he thinks very much about them and coming home. Not only now veterans, he's given the idea of veterans' families the ability to have an education and their wives as much for job training too. And so he's cared about the veterans when they come home after they serve their country, because veterans have a turmoil within themselves that lasts a lifetime. They remember things that happened to them and things that happened to their friends that they'll never forget.
Thank you for speaking with us, sir.
Thank you,
Jennifer.
Debbie Elliott. Yes.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
I'll talk to you later, Debbie.
Matt Continente, veterans, clearly a theme here tonight, but really this weekend last to this point so far, not a lot on actual national security issues. I mean, the U.S. still does have soldiers stationed abroad.
No, that's right. I mean, I think the emphasis on veterans is very good for the administration, and it's good that they're paying attention to veterans. But I have been surprised. There haven't been many mentions of Osama bin Laden. I was expecting many.
Let alone Afghanistan or Iraq.
Well, yeah, I mean, Afghanistan's a little bit of a troubling issue for the president because he's kind of gone back and forth about when exactly the troops will come home. But Iraq, certainly. I mean, he said he was going to get out of Iraq in 2008, and we've gotten out of Iraq, you know. So I have been surprised. I guess the focus is really on getting these women voters, in particular women who voted for Obama in 2008, but may be on the fence in 2012, basically scaring them with the idea that somehow Romney and Ryan are going to remove their right to an abortion or take away their health care or their birth control. I mean, Cecile Richards, who we heard of, who did not, by the way, get her mother's oratorical skills, said Romney would end access to birth control. And that's simply a lie.
All right, we'll come back to that. Right now, General Eric Shinseki is taking the podium in Charlotte. He's the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
All of the veterans in the audience. My name is Rick Shinseki, and I'm a soldier. I spent 38 years in uniform, and as a veteran, I'm here to speak about a president whose devotion to veterans is sincere. It is steadfast. It is strong. I know this firsthand. I first met Barack Obama in November 2008. I soon realized we were both shaped and inspired by family members who had served in World War II. Three of my uncles helped liberate Europe. When they returned home, they helped to raise me. They used the original GI Bill to open small businesses. They worked hard, played by the rules, and loved this country. I learned those values from them. And President Obama learned the same values from the veterans and his family. During our first meeting nearly 4 years ago, the President's commitment to veterans was clear. He understands that we have the finest military in the world, and we have a commitment to keep our faith with our men and women in uniform. Today, our Iraq and Afghanistan warriors have displayed enormous discipline and love of country. We have a moral obligation to care for them when they come home. Healthcare, education, jobs. But above all, we owe veterans dignity and respect. President Obama gets it. He listens. He wants the facts. And the results of his leadership are clear. Since President Obama took office, nearly 800,000 veterans, including a growing population of women veterans, have gained access to VA health care. There's been a historic expansion of treatment for PTSD and traumatic brain injury. President Obama has expanded job training to prepare veterans for the jobs of the future. And we are on track to end veterans' homelessness by 2015. No president since Franklin Delano Roosevelt has done more for veterans. We could not ask for a stronger advocate. We've made tremendous progress under this president's leadership, but there is much more to be done for the men and women who guarantee our way of life. They have served selflessly with unmatched valor, sacrifice, and distinction. And President Obama is determined that we will repay our debt to them. God bless our veterans. God bless our president. And may God continue to bless this wonderful country of ours. Thank you. Good evening.
And that was General Eric Shinseki, now the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. He's also a former chief of staff of the U.S. Army. He said that he and President Obama bonded that when they realized both were shaped by family members who were World War II veterans. He said President Obama has a commitment to men and women in uniform. He cited a historic expansion of treatment for PTSD, expanded jobs trainings for vets, and said the president is tackling homelessness among veterans. Up next, Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper.
Wildfires that devastated homes and businesses took livelihoods and lives. Then, a few weeks later, terrible shootings in a darkened theater. So on behalf of everyone in Colorado, let me start tonight by saying thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your thoughts and your prayers. Thank you for your generosity to families who lost so much. The president came to Colorado. He walked the charred landscape, met with firefighters, and also with those who lost homes or businesses. He and Michelle visited hospitals to comfort families of loved ones killed and injured. They shared in our grief and brought a message of support on behalf of the entire country. We weren't Democrats or Republicans in that moment. We were simply Americans trying to help one another. These tragedies remind us not to waste time bickering. We have the power to come together, and we need to do this as a nation. It will take a spirit of generosity and collaboration to meet the difficult challenges that we face. We recognize this in Colorado, where we've been able to pass vital legislation with strong bipartisan majorities. I'm luckier than President Obama. After my inauguration, Colorado's Republican legislators didn't immediately start planning my defeat. We worked together. Some even complimented me for releasing my tax returns in the campaign. 22 years of them.
Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, this is special coverage of the Democratic National Convention from NPR News. This is special coverage of the 2012 Democratic National Convention from NPR News. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. It is a diverse group of speakers at the convention tonight, from members of Congress to veterans to some Democratic superstars, including a major speech from former President Bill Clinton. We're working up to that moment when President Clinton will formally place President Obama's name into nomination. Joining me now from Charlotte is Representative Steve Israel of New York, who is also chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Welcome to you.
It's great to be with you.
We've heard about the drive for 25 seats that Madam Pelosi is touting in the House, the magic number for Democrats to regain the majority. Is there a part of the country that you're most focused on?
You know, we have opportunities throughout the country. We need 25 seats to take the House back, to be able to stand up for the middle class and spend more time trying to figure out how to open up small businesses than how to close down Planned Parenthood. And we have avenues of opportunity throughout the country. We'll do very well. We anticipate doing very well in California, Illinois, Florida, New York, areas where redistricting was kind to us. Also Arizona, Nevada, Washington State. So it's really throughout the country. We now have 75 districts in play. We only need 25 to take the majority. We are in range of a Democratic majority with 62 days left.
So many of the, well, the national polls are so tight between Mr. Romney and Mr. Obama. What are the polls looking like out there? And are there really any moderates or independents left, or has everyone made up their mind?
No, there are quite a few moderates and independents left, and that's the battleground, Jennifer. You know, we lost the House in 2010 because, quite honestly, we lost 9 million independent voters. They were with House Democrats in 2006, with us in 2008. They weren't with us in 2010. Our goal is to get as many of those independent voters back as we can. There was just a generic poll that was released within the past couple weeks that shows us with now an 8-point lead among those independent voters. If we maintain that 8-point lead, I think we get the majority.
We talked earlier with Leader Pelosi about the brief uproar this evening over the party platform there, restoring a line about Jerusalem being the capital of Israel. It's my understanding that it was a bit contentious. There were still a lot of people who did not want to make that change. Do you see this being an ongoing tension?
No, I don't think it's an ongoing tension. Look, here's the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. You took a look at the Republican convention in Tampa. It was like the Stepford convention. They walk alike, they talk alike, they think alike. They all walk to the far, far right. Our party in this convention is more diverse. We celebrate our diversity. With diversity comes dissenting opinions. I'm the sponsor of the resolution to move our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, something the Bush administration opposed, by the way. I disagree with those who feel that Jerusalem is not the undivided capital of Israel. But we celebrate our diversity. And the fact of the matter is, when we expressed our concerns, the platform was corrected. It's no longer an issue unless Republicans want to keep making it an issue, which tells me that they're more interested in using Israel as a political football than supporting the state of Israel as a strategic ally of the United States.
All right. Representative Steve Israel of New York, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
And we just heard a big rousing reception there for Sister Simone Campbell, who is at the podium now in Charlotte. She is the executive director of Network, a social justice organization, and she's been touring nine states with the Nuns on the Bus tour. Let's listen in.
Endorsed. Paul Ryan claims this budget reflects the principles of our shared faith. But the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops stated that the Ryan budget failed a basic moral test because it would harm families living in poverty. We agree with our bishops, and that's why we went on the road to stand with struggling families and to lift up our Catholic sisters who serve them. Their work to alleviate suffering would be seriously harmed by the Romney-Ryan budget. And that is wrong. During our journey, I rediscovered a few truths. First, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are correct when they say that each individual should be responsible. But their budget goes astray in not acknowledging that we are responsible not only for ourselves and our immediate family, rather, our faith strongly affirms that we are all responsible for one another. I am my sister's keeper. I am my brother's keeper. While we were in Toledo, I met 10-year-old twins, Matt and Mark, who had gotten into trouble at school for fighting. Sister Virginia and the staff at the Pottawa Center took them in when they were suspended and discovered on a home visit that these 10-year-olds were trying to care for their bedridden mother who has MS and diabetes. They were her only caregivers. The sisters got her medical help and are giving the boys some stability. Now the boys are free to claim much of their childhood that they were losing. Clearly, we all share responsibility for the Matts and Marks in our nation. In Milwaukee, I met Billy and his wife and two boys at St. Benedict's Dining Room. Billy's work hours were cut back in the recession, and Billy is taking responsibility for himself and his family. But right now, without food stamps, he and his wife could not put food on their family table. We share responsibility for creating an economy where parents with jobs earn enough to care for their families. In order to cut taxes for the wealthy, the Romney-Ryan budget would make it even tougher on hardworking Americans like Billy to feed their families. Paul Ryan says this budget is in keeping with the moral values of our shared faith. I disagree. In Cincinnati, I met Ginny, who had just come from her sister's memorial service. When Ginny's sister, Margaret, lost her job, she lost her health insurance. She developed cancer and had no access to diagnosis or treatment. She died unnecessarily, and that is tragic, and it is wrong. The Affordable Care Act will cover people like Margaret. We all share responsibility to ensure that this vital health care reform law is properly implemented and that all governors expand Medicaid coverage so no more Margarets die from lack of care. This is part of my pro-life stance and the right thing to do. I have so many other stories to tell, but I'll only tell you one more. In Hershey, Pennsylvania, a woman in her late 30s came to me, approached us. She asked for the names of some people she could talk to because she felt alone and isolated. Her neighbors have been polarized by politics masquerading as values. She cares about the well-being of her people in her community. She wishes the rest of the nation would listen to one another with kindness and compassion. Listen to one another rather than yell at each other. I told her then, and I tell her now, that she is not alone. Looking out at you tonight, I feel your presence combined with that of the thousands of caring people we met on our journey. Together, we understand an immoral budget that hurts already struggling families does not reflect our nation's values. We are better than that. So I urge you, join us on the bus. Join us together as we stand with Matt and Mark, Billy and his family, and the woman in Hershey, and the Margarets of our nation. This is what nuns on the bus are all about. We care for the 100%, and that will secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our nation. So join us. Join us as we nuns on the bus, all of us, strive for faith, family, and fairness. Thank you so much.
A very warm reception there for Sister Simone Campbell. She's the executive director of the Roman Catholic Social Justice Group Network, and she's going around 9 states with the Nuns on the Bus tour. She said, personal responsibility is good, but I am also my sister's keeper, and she criticized the Paul Ryan budget plan as immoral, saying it cuts too much from the social safety net. Next, Delaware Governor Jack Markell. He's the chair of the National Governors Association. He's also up for re-election this fall. Delaware Governor Jack Markell in Charlotte.
I am privileged to be the governor of Delaware. Home to America's vice president and our favorite son, Joe Biden. Joe has never forgotten his middle-class roots or the lessons he learned. And you know what? Mitt Romney hasn't forgotten his roots or the lessons he's learned either. And that's what worries me about Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney says that he should be president because he was a business executive. Now, I've got nothing against business executives running for office. After all, I am one. Before I entered public life, I earn my MBA at night while working during the day. I helped lead the wireless revolution at Nextel and grew with it from 13 to 3,000 employees. I am a proud, card-carrying capitalist. And make no mistake, I believe in private equity, which helped back Nextel. But as someone who has been a businessman and a governor, let me level with you. Just because Mitt Romney was a successful private equity executive, that does not mean he deserves to be president. Because when you move from business to government, what matters are the lessons you learn and what those lessons say about your priorities. And Mitt Romney learned all the wrong lessons. As an executive in private equity, Mitt Romney's focus was on the bottom line. And that makes sense. His constituents were his financial shareholders. When he closed factories and sent jobs overseas, it was to benefit his shareholders. That was his job, and he was good at it. But when you're a governor,
and we've been listening to Jack Markell,
different.
The governor of Delaware, also
your
chair of the National Governors Association. He said he's a card-carrying capitalist, but just because Mitt Romney was a private equity executive does not mean he should be president. He's contending he learned all the wrong lessons. We're going down to the floor now in Charlotte at the convention. NPR's Sonari Glinton is with us. Hi, Sonari.
Hey, Jennifer. I'm in the Indiana delegation, and during Sister Simone Campbell's speech of eight, the delegation here was really emotional and really rapt. I'm here with Tim Banter, who's just north of Indianapolis, and you said that you thought that the sister was incredibly courageous.
Yes, I mean, when anybody stands up to a political party or within your own faith and says to the leadership, that's not right. You know, we need to serve everyone and go on the road and spread that message. That is pretty brave when it's not popular, maybe within the whole church.
And so, as a Catholic voter and a delegate, I mean, what did you think of the health care bill?
I think it's great because the whole idea is to take care of each other, make sure that nobody is wanting or needing. In that time of need, they can go and get the help that they don't have to stay in an emergency room and wait for hope to get care. And if they need cancer treatments, their insurance won't drop them. There's that net to save them. So I think that as a Catholic, and as I've been educated, because I've gone to Catholic schools and public schools, but they taught us that we need to take care of each other, and that's what the Affordable Health Care Plan does.
And now in Indiana doesn't seem to be in play this year.
No, fortunately not. But I believe every state is a battleground. There is hope. We're going to try our hardest. You know, we'll see what happens.
Well, thank you, Tim, so much. Back to you, Jennifer.
Okay, thanks, NPR's Sonari Glinton. And I'm joined now by Mayor Julian Castro. He's the mayor of San Antonio, Texas. He gave last night's much-lauded keynote speech. Welcome to you, Mayor.
Thanks for having me.
Texas, another state that's not really in play this year, large, reliable GOP stronghold. Do you think there's any way to turn it around, say, in the next decade or so?
Oh, I have no doubt that in the next few years it's going to go to a purple state and then a blue state. And for three quick reasons. First, because you have a profound growth of the Hispanic community. In the last 10 years, it accounted for more than 60% of the growth in the state. Secondly, you have an infusion of folks who are moving in to Texas because of the economic boom from other states, folks who are more moderate, traditionally moderate. And then thirdly, because the Republican Party in Texas has become quite far to the right, as exemplified by Ted Cruz, who will likely become the senator from Texas, and so they're I believe, going to lose moderate support over the next few years if they continue in that course. So I see the next 6 to 8 years being the time frame when the state will turn over.
But, you know, there are demographic realities, and I've heard Republicans say, wow, we really need to go for more, you know, beyond the white vote. And Republicans, President Bush from Texas, did very well with Hispanics. Don't you see them going over more aggressively? And as the Republican, the Hispanic population gets bigger, I can't imagine it would maintain such a cohesive voting bloc just for Democrats.
Oh, there's no question that the Hispanic community is not monolithic. It is a diverse community. However, on issues across the board, not just immigration reform, but on job creation, on tax policy, on health care, on education, the problem for the Republicans and the reason that President Obama is winning the Hispanic vote by more than 30 points right now are the policies that Republicans have embraced, from wanting to veto a DREAM Act to wanting to get rid of the Department of Education to wanting to get rid of the Affordable Care Act that's going to provide care to 9 million more Latinos. They're just on the wrong side of policy, and the Latino community gets that.
If national immigration reform, though, were to be achieved, would that send more immigrant Hispanics maybe to the Republican Party?
Well, I think it depends on how it's achieved. But I do believe that it would take one issue off the table. And regardless of the political dynamic behind it, I believe that it should be achieved. So hopefully in this next session, Congress will get on to the business of doing that.
Mayor Julian Castro of San Antonio, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We are working our way toward a headliner speech by former President Bill Clinton later tonight. You'll find more convention news and analysis at our website, where you can also join in a live chat. That's at npr.org. You're listening to special coverage of the 2012 Democratic National Convention from NPR News.